Roxy. Roxy's seen her dad hit blokes before. She's seen him hit them square in the face with all his rings on, casual, just as he was turning to leave. She's seen him punch a bloke till his nose was bleeding and he fell to the floor, and Bernie kicked him in the stomach again and again. And when he was finished, he wiped his hands on the handkerchief from his back pocket and looked down at the mess of the bloke's face and said, "Don't you fuck with me. Don't you think you can fuck with me?" She's always wanted that. Her dad's body is a castle for her, a shelter and a weapon. When he puts his arms around her shoulders, she feels a mixture of terror and comfort. She's run up the stairs from his fist, screaming. She's seen how he hurts people who want to hurt her. She's always wanted to have that. It's the only thing worth having. "You know what's happened, don't you, darling?" says Bernie. "Fucking Primrose," says Ricky. Ricky's the oldest of her half-brothers. Bernie says, "It was a declaration of war. Killing your mum, darling. And it's taken us a long time to be sure we can get him. But now we're sure. And we're ready." There's a look that passes around the room. Between Ricky and Terry, the middle son. Between Terry and Daryl, the youngest one. Three sons from his own wife. And then there's Roxy. She knows why she's been living with her granny this past year and not with them. Half in and half out. That's what she is. Not in enough to have over for Sunday lunch, but not out enough to leave out of something like this. Something like this involves all of them. Roxy says, "We should kill him." Terry laughs. His dad gives him a look, and the laugh cuts off halfway through a breath. You don't want to mess with Bernie Monk. Not even if you're his full-born son. "She's right," says Bernie. "You're right, Roxy. We should probably kill him. But he's strong and he's got a lot of friends and we need to go slow and careful. If we do it, we're going to do it just the once. Knock everything out in one go." They get her to show them what she can do. She holds back a bit, gives each of them a dead arm in turn. Daryl swears when she touches him and she feels a bit sorry. Daryl's the only one who's always been nice to her. He brought her an extra chocolate mouse from the sweet shop whenever his dad took him over to her mum's after school. After she's finished, Bernie rubs his big arm and says, "That all you can do?" So she shows them. She's seen stuff on the internet. They follow her out into the garden, where Bernie's wife Barbara has one of them ornamental ponds full of big orange fish swimming around and around each other. It's cold. Roxy's feet crunch on the frost-crisped grass. She kneels down and puts the tips of her fingers into the pond. There's a smell, suddenly, like ripe fruit, sweet and succulent. The smell of high summer. A flicker of light in the dark water. A sound like a hiss and a crackle. And one by one, the fish bob up to the surface of the water. "Fuck," says Terry.
"Bloody hell," says Ricky.
"Mum's gonna be pissed off," says Daryl. Barbara Monk never came to see Roxy. Not after her mother died, not after the funeral, nothing. Roxy's glad for a moment, thinking of her coming back to see all her fish dead.
"I'll deal with your mother," says Bernie. "We can use this, Rox Margill."
Bernie finds a couple of his blokes who've got daughters about the right age, gets them to show what they can do too. They do play fighting, sparring each against each, or two against one. Bernie watches them in the garden, sparking and flickering. All over the world, people are going crazy about this thing, but a few people always look at anything and go, "Where's the profit in this? And where's the advantage?" One thing's certain after the sparring matches and practice bouts. Roxy's got a lot of it. Not just more than average, more than any of the other girls they can find to practice with her. She learns a few things about radius and reach, about how to make it arc and how it works better on wet skin. She feels proud of how strong she is. She puts everything into that. She's the strongest one they've found. Out of all the girls they've heard of. That's why, when it comes time, When Bernie's arranged the whole thing and they know just where Primrose is going to be, that's why Roxy comes along too. Ricky pulls her into the loo before they leave. You're a big girl now, right, Rox? She nods. She knows about this. Kind of. He pulls a little plastic bag out from his pocket and taps some white powder onto the side of the sink. You've seen this before, haven't you?
Yeah.
Ever done it before? She shakes her head. Okay, then. He shows her how to do it, with a rolled up 50 from his wallet, and tells her she can keep the note when they're done, perks of the job. She feels very clear and very clean when they've done it. It's not that she's forgotten what happened to her mum. Her anger is still pure and white and electric. But she doesn't feel the sadness of it at all. It's just a thing she heard about once. It's good. She is powerful. She has this whole day in her fingers. She lets a long arc go between the palms of her hands, loud and sparking, a longer arc than she's ever managed before.
Whoa! Says Ricky. Not in here, all right?
She brings it down and leaves it glittering around the pads of her fingers. It makes her want to laugh, how much she has and how easy it is to set it loose. He tips a little bit of the powder into a clean bag and pops it into her jeans pocket, just in case you need it. Don't do it unless you get scared, okay? Don't do it in the car, for Christ's sake. She doesn't need it. Everything belongs to her anyway. The next few hours are shutter snaps, pictures like on her phone. She blinks, and there's a picture. Blinks again, and there's something else. She looks at her watch and it's 2 p.m. Looks a moment later and it's 1:30. She couldn't worry about anything if she tried. It's good. They've drilled her in the plan. Primrose is going to be there with just 2 blokes. Weinstein, his mate, has sold him out. Brought him to this warehouse saying he needs to have a meeting. Bernie and his boys will be waiting behind some of the packing cases with the guns. 2 of the boys will be outside to close the doors, seal them in. Take them by surprise. Let her rip. All done and home in time for tea. Primrose won't expect it. Roxy's only really coming along because she deserves to see it happen, after what she's been through. And because Bernie's always been a belt and braces man, that's how he survived as long as he has. So she's hiding upstairs in the warehouse, with a peephole view down through the grating of the upper level, surrounded by boxes, just in case. She's there, looking down, when Primrose arrives. Shutter open, shutter closed. When it goes down, it's quick and deadly and a complete clusterfuck. Bernie and the boys are downstairs. They shout to Weinstein to get out of the way, and Weinstein does this thing, this shrug, like he's trying to say, hard luck, mate, hard cheese. But he ducks down anyway as Bernie and his sons advance, and that's when Primrose starts smiling. And his blokes come in. So many more of them than Weinstein said he'd have here. Someone's fucking lied. Click, goes the shutter. Primrose is a tall man, thin and pale. There's 20 of his blokes here if there's one. They're firing, scattered around the entrance to the building, using iron half doors up against the rails for cover. There are just more of them than Bernie's men. 3 of them have Terry pinned down behind a single wooden crate. Big, slow Terry with his huge, white, acne-marked forehead. And as Roxy watches, he peeps his head out from behind the box. Shouldn't do that, she tries to shout, but nothing comes out. Primrose aims carefully, taking all the time in the world over it. He's smiling as he does it. And then there's a red hole in the middle of Terry's face, and he falls forward like a felled tree. Roxy looks at her hands. There are long electrical arcs passing between them, even though she doesn't think she ever told them to do that. She should do something. She feels afraid. She's only 15. She pulls the little packet out of her jeans and sniffs up some more of the powder. She sees the energy running along her arms and hands. She thinks, and it's like a voice outside her whispering in her ear, "You are made for this." She's on an iron walkway. It's connected to the metal half-doors downstairs, which Primrose's men are using for cover. There's a lot of them down there, touching the iron or leaning against it. She sees what she can do all in a flash, and it makes her so excited she can barely sit still. Her one knee starts jiggling. This is it. These are the men who killed her mum, and now she knows what to do. She waits until one's resting his fingertips on the rail and one's leaning his head against it and a third's clutching onto a handle to lean down low to fire. One of them gets off a shot that hits Bernie in the side. Roxy breathes out slowly through pursed lips. "You've had this coming," she thinks. She lights up the rail. Three of them go down, backs arching, crying out, fitting and gnashing and eyes rolled back. "Gotcha. You asked for it." And then they spot her. Freeze frame. There aren't many of them left now. They're evenly matched. Maybe Bernie's even got the upper hand, especially because Primrose is a bit scared now. You can see it on his face. There's thundering steps on the iron stairs, and two blokes try to grab her. One of them leans close to her, because that's scary to normal kids, to any little girl, and it's just instinct. But she only has to put a couple of fingers to his temple and let a jolt go across his forehead, and he's fallen to the floor crying bloody tears. The other one grabs her around the waist. "Don't they know anything?" And she gets his wrist. She's learning it doesn't take much to stop them touching her. And she feels pleased with herself until she looks down and sees Primrose heading out the door that leads to the back of the block. He's going to get away. Bernie is moaning on the floor and Terry's bleeding from the hole in his head. Terry's gone, just like her mum. She's sure of that. But Primrose is trying to get away. "Oh no, you're not, you little shit," Roxy thinks. "Oh no, you're bloody not." She sprints down the steps, keeping low, and follows Primrose back through the building along a corridor through an empty open plan office. She sees him veering left and she speeds up. If he gets to his car, she'll have lost him, and he'll come back on them hard and fast. He won't leave any of them alive. She thinks of his men taking her mum by the throat. He ordered this. He made it come true. Her legs pump harder. He goes down another corridor into a room. There's a door to the fire exit stairs, and she hears the handle go, and she's saying, "Fuck, fuck, fuck," to herself. But when she hurls her body round the corner, Primrose is still in that room. The door was locked, wasn't it? He's got hold of a metal bin and he's bashing up the window to break it. And she dives down just like they'd practiced, slides and aims for his shin. Her one hand grasps his ankle, sweet bare flesh, and she gives it to him. He doesn't make a sound the first time. He topples to the ground like his knees given way, even while his arms are still trying to bash the window with that bin so it clangs into the wall. And as he goes down, she grabs his wrist and she gives it to him again. She can tell from the way he screams that no one's done this to him before. It's not the pain, it's the surprise, the horror. She sees the line run up his arm, just like on the bloke in her mum's house. And thinking of that, even remembering it, makes it run stronger and hotter through her. He screams like there are spiders under his skin, like they're biting him inside his flesh. She eases off a bit. "Please!" he says, "please!" He looks at her, makes his swimming eyes focus. "Oh no, you," he says. "You're Monk's kid. Your mum was Christina, wasn't she?" He's not supposed to say her mum's name. He shouldn't do that. She gets him across the throat and he screams and then he's saying, "Fuck, fuck, fuck!" And then he's gabbling. "I'm sorry about it. I am sorry. It was about your dad, but I can help you. You can come and work for me, brown girl like you. Strong girl like you. Never felt anything like it. Bernie doesn't want you around, I can tell you that. Come and work for me. Tell me what you want. I can get it for you." Roxy says, "You killed my mum." He goes, "Your dad killed three of my boys that month." She goes, "You sent your men and they killed my mum." And Primrose goes, so quiet and so still. She thinks he's going to start screaming again any second, or he's going to launch himself at her. Teeth first. Then he smiles and shrugs. He says, "I've got nothing for you, love, if this is the way it is.
but you were never supposed to see it. Newland said you weren't going to be home. Someone's coming up the stairs. She hears them. Feet. More than one pair. Boots on the stairs. Could be her dad's men, could be Primrose's. Could be she'll have to run or there'll be a bullet for her any second. I was home, though, Roxy says. Please, says Primrose. Please, don't. And she's back there again. Clean and clear and with the crystals exploding in her brain back in her mum's house. It was just what her mum said. Just that. She thinks of her dad with his rings on and his knuckles coming away from a man's mouth dripping blood. This is the only thing worth having. She puts her hand to Primrose's temples and she kills him.